Thanks again. Welcome to RCFB Talk 13. We're talking about the national championship game. We're talking about what your favorite memories have been of this season. And we can get that started soon. All right. As I say that kind of with a slight question mark. There we go. Hey, there's JD. I will go ahead and invite him in. So I hope all of you have enjoyed championship weekend with both the FCS title game and the FBS title game. Hey, JD, now that you're with us, how's everything going for you?
Oh, it's going all right. Finishing this season with a loss to an air fryer. So been a heck of a night so far. But, you know, I'm ready to talk college football, mourn the ending of this wonderful season, and, you know, try to cope with the fact that I've got 227 days until we kick off in Ireland again. I'm really excited to talk about football. Sad that it's gone away from this season. Trying to now find what I can fill to fill that void.
Absolutely. So I guess the first thing we'll talk about is the national championship that, of course, just occurred last night with Georgia breaking their 40-year-plus streak in Indianapolis. And I was there for RCFB in the press box for this game. We've done four of the national championships previously, and this is my second. So it was nice to be there. I got to be honest, Indianapolis – was a bit confusing as a selection before, and even more so when you go and see a game there. They put on a good show in the sense that they seem to be completely oriented well for hosting, you know, a business conference or something where you'd sell, you know, air conditioners or tractors or something. But the entire game week, at least the weekend, I got there on Friday when really, the crowds didn't show up, honestly, until Sunday. It felt like you were going to a trade show, not really a national championship environment. And that, I thought, was a bit of a shame. Again, everything there was very functional. If you haven't been to Indianapolis, the way they've sort of put this together, Lucas Oil Stadium is a fine venue. It's at one end. Right north of it, they have the fairly large the Indiana Convention Center, all connected with tunnels and bridges. And then, you know, the JW Marriott, which was the media hotel, which is where they were supposed to do some of the press conferences before COVID made it so they were all virtual. And it's a nice little corner of this downtown, but it feels very separate from everything else. It's not like 2 years ago. 2 years ago was, you know, the French Quarter. So you have that New Orleans vibe, you know, the media hotel, all the conferences were on Canal Street, but Superdome is its own entity, you know, just west of that. And I'm sure Miami would have been that way too, had they not had their unfortunate COVID year. So as far as an experience for a national championship, I felt a little bit bad for Alabama and Georgia fans, not so much for the Georgia fans. And I guess, you know, maybe it was a win-win for the fans that did show up. To some extent, Alabama fans, they have been there before and quite a few times recently. And for Georgia fans, I mean, this was a big deal for them. Obviously, they had that loss to Alabama in the national championship several years ago, and here they went in and won it all. So I think all those Georgia fans actually have a wonderful feeling when it comes to Indianapolis now. But as far as experience, I would
but overall,
give it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, we keep.
Well, I was about to say, I know you.
Oh, here we
you...
go. Here we go. I was going to say, I'm operating on little sleep. One thing I think most people who follow the national championship don't appreciate, and it's one of those things where I remember years and years ago, I would always see the national championship game. I would see these tweets from some of the reporters I enjoyed say, I cannot wait to start sleeping again. And until you cover a national championship, you don't get it. Because, I mean, I took a video for a friend and I sent it to them in the morning. I'm like, this is what I was doing at 1:30 in the morning. And we were still listening to, you know, the post-game pressers in the press box. Because, again, they were being done virtually due to the COVID concerns. And then, you know, you have a 9 a.m. post-game presser of the champions on, you know, Tuesday morning. So I was running into reporters that one guy I ran into him and he's like, man, I have not slept all night. And he looked it. I got my 3 hours kind of in between. But it really is. It's a very late night and it's brutal and it's a Monday night. And I know viewers complain about it being late on a Monday night, and I think they do it because they experimented, apparently. And for some reason, they tend to get more casual viewers on that Monday night mark than they were necessarily on Fridays. It would be a disaster. No one would tune in. Saturday and Sunday were kind of a mix. And then so finally, they seem to have been comfortable with this Monday night thing. But I know it isn't the most popular time for most viewers. I think they, from what I understand, the way they look at it is you get the casual, pardon me, you get the hardcore viewers who will watch at any time, no matter where you put the game. And they seem to, I guess, bring in some of that Monday night football would be normally what they would watch kind of traffic as well.
Well, more importantly, I know that you mentioned the lack of sleep after covering that national championship game. My huge question on this is you devoured, I think it was 16 St. Elmo shrimp at room temperature with that famous horseradish sauce. How's the body feeling after 16 room temperature shrimp at halftime of that game?
That was one of the funnier things to sort of see develop over the game on Twitter. Because let's be honest, the first half of that game, and we will talk more about the game. The game itself ramped up in pure excitement, I'd say, as it went on. By the fourth quarter, it was like watching a completely – like a Pac-12 after dark game. It broke out in the Lucas Oil Stadium. But the first half was pretty quiet, five field goals. I admit, you know, even the press box, you could hear kind of murmurs of, you know, all right, it's going to be one of these games. It's going to be defense, which is what we expected, and nothing surprising given Alabama and Georgia in that game. But then I happened to be sitting like two seats from the guy who I guess was not really, he wasn't a reporter. He was part of the host committee. And he just started walking around and announcing, I'm going to let everyone know, like a minute left in the first half, we're going to be serving St. Elmo's world famous shrimp cocktail. Now, St. Elmo's, all right. I mean, Indianapolis, I'm sure it has its nice bits. And I went around town quite a bit. It's still not the most, it's what people think where I live, Minneapolis is like, except with far less interesting stuff to do. And I'm sorry for saying that. But St. Elmo's is like their go-to steakhouse, and they're apparently known for this shrimp cocktail. I didn't bother going because I knew it was going to be booked out. But they apparently, and the local media said this is what it is like. They brought just platters of these things. I mean, the reporters are known for being kind of voracious and willing to consume almost anything that is brought before them in the press box, especially at halftime. And the CFP is willing to throw some money at these kinds of treats. So I remember 2 years ago, they put king cake in the press box as kind of a treat, which was neat. You know, all of them had their little baby in them and all of that stuff, if you know your king cake. But here, I mean, there was an audible kind of like excitement. My favorite moment is when people started going to those platters that they had out there. One of the reporters, because again, remember, at this point, it's a 9-6 or a 69 game, if however you want to say it.
We're always going to say it the nice way.
Exactly. But one of the reporters straight out blurted out, why do I have a feeling this is going to be the most exciting thing to happen tonight in the game? But, yeah, I mean, it was
thankfully it wasn't.
You know, thankfully it wasn't. But just, again, to finish the shrimp thing is, it was funny because obviously media was getting really excited. Everyone was tweeting shrimp photos. And, you know, it was setting it up like Indiana is a landlocked state. Are these shrimp even on ice? It looked like they were all room temperature, you know? A whole bunch of reporters, with some of which aren't the most athletic folks, just loading up on shrimp. I guess they're best known for their cocktail sauce, which has a really strong horseradish kick to it. And it did. I like horseradish, so it cleared the sinuses and you know, kicked like a mule. But yeah, no one got sick as far as I know. I feel fine. But that was kind of one of those social media moments of humor that a lot of people were tweeting, I think, during the game. Then a lot of the folks, I mean, Spencer Hall, I think, had some of my favorite comments. Like, you know, we feel bad for anybody on a flight leaving Indianapolis today next to someone who was in that press box. But, so anyway, I'm not going to dwell on that too much more. But that was one of those kind of quirkier things. You know, one of my favorite moments and something that I just got lucky and captured it, and we put it up on Reddit CFP Twitter. It was a video. I was just, because, again, due to COVID, they weren't letting us onto the field after the game. Usually, typically they do. You walk out as a confetti falls so you can kind of get close and see what's going on and see what the players are doing, see what the coaches are saying, kind of get that vibe. But this time, because of the Omicron concerns, everyone had to stay in the press box. So I was just doing what I thought was going to be this pretty useless video of the confetti falling from, you know, the 40th floor or wherever the heck we are in the press box. And then suddenly you just heard screaming, which if you know the press box, you typically do not hear. And then all the Georgia coaches ran out of their booth. You know, all the guys up there, all who were spotting, I think they were mostly on the offense. And they just bolted for that elevator because we knew there was a coach's elevator that had been designated on the side I was on for the Georgia side. And they just ran out screaming. And it was beautiful. You just remember what it's like to love football. They all looked like a bunch of little boys having the great, like, you know, they were just told they were leaving school or, you know, the Christmas presents were by the tree. I mean, they were running like mad and waiting for each other, hooting, hollering. You know, if you can get a chance to track down that video, I recommend it. And it's so funny. I've seen two versions of the video, and it was me and the guy standing next to me, although I took a longer take, and I tend to be a little more film-oriented because I went to the University of Southern California, and I did take film classes. But I recommend it. It was nice. And it was actually one thing people don't know, and I might as well mention this. There was actually a huge argument at that elevator in the final minutes of the game, and it had nothing to do with the game. I didn't want to turn back and look, but there was somebody raising absolute hell about wanting to use that elevator. And the guy who the stadium had assigned to secure the elevator for when those coaches ran out was getting into, like, they were getting into almost a yelling match, which, again, in the press box is not something you typically hear, all about use of that elevator. And I was really glad they cleared that up in time for those coaches to run and get it. So, you know, it was a great moment for just sort of feeling the vibe and remembering that these are guys just having the best time of their lives coaching on the highest level in the biggest arena for college football. You know, JD's, that was, you know, so my impressions were from inside the stadium. Like, for example, I always love hearing people like, what is the most iconic moment? And I think some of it has to come from whether you saw the game on TV or if you saw it in person or, you know, you saw it way up in the rafters like we do in the press box. For me, the pivotal moment was that pick six. But it's so funny. I've heard others say other moments. How about you? What did you see when you were watching the game?
For me, it was absolutely that pick six by Kelee Ringo. And then he takes it 79 yards back to the house. Because the thing is, we've seen this story so many times with Georgia for the last 41 years of it almost felt like at some point Georgia was going to blow it. Because they've always historically blown it. And once we got to, I think the score was 13-12, and then the fumble happens with Stenson Bennett, went in their own red zone, and the hand goes backwards, ball goes out, it's under review, and Alabama gets the most nonchalant fumble recovery in the history of the sport. It almost felt like, oh no, here comes the script again. And it never felt like Georgia had it secured until that pick six. And the absolute second that Ringo came down with that football, it was the, oh my God, this is real. Georgia is actually going to win a national championship game. And I think that's, for me, is the moment that felt like this is the iconic moment. Oh my God, it's happening. And I can't believe that, you know, especially for Georgia to finally win in such a huge way against this foe, Kirby Smart, winning up against his old boss. That felt for me like the final storybook moment. And especially with the story that Stetson Bennett had of a walk-on eventually becoming the actual starter, the way that Kirby Smart was able to finally defeat Nick Saban in his, I think it was his either his fourth or fifth attempt since becoming a new head coach. And it was an incredible story just to watch all the way to the end. And that pick six, just the absolute seal.
Yeah, I would say definitely as I was watching the game develop in that fourth quarter, even when Georgia was up by 8 points, that before that interception, then that pick six, Alabama was moving down the field. And in my head, I'm like, well, this could be Bryce Young's like Heisman, like post Heisman moment, you know, like, remember, this is why you gave me the award. March down the field, go for two, tie the game, you know, maybe win it overtime. And I'm sure I can imagine a lot of Georgia fans were worried they were going to be on that side of the story again. But yeah, that picks, and it's so funny. So the pick, was so dramatic. And I think even it happened even in the press box. And I heard when I went back and read some of the observations of people who were at the game in the Reddit post game thread and a few of the other places, a lot of folks just sort of stopped even paying attention right after that pick. Cause it was like, oh, that's it. That's the moment the game should be over. And then, you know, 10 seconds later, oh, he's still running. You know, he's still what felt like moments later, he still got the ball and he's running into the end zone. I think I even reflected in the way I tweeted it. I was like, you know, it's a pick. Oh, and then, you know, follow right after it. It's a pick six, you know, because there was just a bit of a that. And it's so funny, too, because in the post game, Kirby was like, you know, people were asking him, what was it like for you? It happened really close to you. What was your reaction when that seemingly game ending interception happened? And he said, my reaction was I was screaming, you know, get down. He was hoping he was so afraid that something was going to go wrong. Like he saw the wide receiver coming right back at Ringo. And he's like, what if he knocks the ball out and Al Bennett gets the ball back? So he was screaming at him to get down. But he said, you know, obviously in retrospect, you know, that wouldn't have been as advantageous as having him run it back and get a touchdown. But I think that moment, I think truly, you know, even the head coach, everyone was just stunned that it happened. And certainly it was the moment that I think defined the game. I think up until that point, it's almost like what happened before it, what happened after it, it didn't matter. But it was an exciting way to end it. And I think certainly Georgia fans are never going to forget that. I think a lot of college football fans aren't going to forget that moment. That was a defining moment.
Oh, certainly.
A very good national championship. But, oh, my goodness, they're gonna make paintings and sell them for a fortune on the official Bulldogs website. I'm almost certain of that. That's totally the thing they would use to market.
Listen, I'm still waiting just to see the eBay listings of all the torn up property in Indianapolis that's been sold off, going with that fantastic Larry Munson call from way back in the day. And, you know, Kirby Smart said it during the trophy ceremony as well. This, again, is such a huge moment for Georgia fans to finally see the top of that mountaintop and to finally be able to get to that program hope that they had been having for 41 years to finally see that realized. And one of the things that I think is going to be huge going down the road is Georgia is still going to be sticking around. Kirby Smart is at his alma mater. He's the first guy to win a national championship as a head coach at his alma mater since Phil Fulmer in 98. And I believe he is only the fifth one since 1950. To do that feat. So we know for the fact that Kirby Smart is going to stay for a while. He's still recruiting at an absolute gangbusters level. This is a thing where I think more so than, oh, this is finally it for Georgia. I have a strong feeling that this is going to be looked back in the history books kind of in the same way as when Nick Saban beat Texas for the first time over at Alabama in 2009 and ended up just getting a giant slew of national championship appearances and national championship trophies. I think we're going to see the same thing with Georgia as they go on throughout the next couple of years here, because he continues to recruit at a high level. We now know he has the coaching scheme to win at the highest level. And for the next couple of years, I'm really looking forward to seeing Georgia be kind of like this new king of the hill when it comes to the SEC, to have these giant challenges, and especially with the out-of-conference scheduling that they've got set up over the next couple of years. I mean, my goodness, like next year, they're starting off against their old defensive coordinator, Dan Lanning, who's going to now be the head coach of Oregon. They're going to be playing in the Chick-fil-A kickoff weekend bowl. And then, of course, you've got Alabama going to Texas as well to start off next year. But overall, though, I think this is going to be not just a watershed moment for Georgia fans and for the Georgia Bulldogs as a program overall, but I think this is really kind of the crowning of a new coach to come in and dominate the scene. And I'm excited to see what that's going to look like long-term in the SEC.
Absolutely. And one thing before we kind of move on, and everyone, we'd love to hear from you. We're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about in terms of what your favorite memories have been this season, what your takeaways are, however you want to kind of look at this season that has just wrapped. But as we head, and you can just hit a request to talk. We'll ask you to unmute your mic and we'll bring you in. to the conversation. But before we get to that point, I just wanted to say one thing I did notice. I sat down at a couple of bars around Indianapolis, talked to some of the fans that were in town, and I think that was the biggest takeaway, particularly from the Georgia fans. It's like, we need to win this, because at what point, you know, no one was in any – I mean, they love Kirby Smart there. They're not stupid. They're not going to, like, boot him out or anything. But there was kind of a thought, you know, he's got the recruits now. We have the facilities. We've got given him the budget to be able to compete with Alabama. Can he just finally do it? I mean, Alabama went in there on a seven-game winning streak against Georgia dating back to 2008. And several of those, including that national title game several years ago, were with Kirby at the helm. So I think this was a pivotal moment for him, a pivotal moment for Georgia. And really, I mean, I don't want to necessarily go too far and say there's been a change in the SEC, but certainly
– No, there certainly hasn't.
There certainly hasn't. I mean, no one's in the right mind is ever going to bet against Nick Saban. Because, you know, everyone wants to know what you're going to – how you're going to pick. You know, if anyone hears you even remotely with any kind of media, especially ahead of a game, you know, before the national championship, well, who you got? You know, and it's like, you know, I just said, I hope it's a close game. I hope it's by 2 points. It's rare for a team to lose to the same team twice. You know, the NFL has divisional matches, you know, things like that. But I'm like, I'd be crazy to bet against Nick Saban. This is why I'm glad I don't bet. So that's all I got to say about that. Well, all right. You know, we'd love to bring in some of you again. If you want, just hit the request. We'll send you an invite. Let's see here. I just sent an invite to Sport Goofin. Sport Goofin, just hit unmute and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. So in college football these past few seasons, this is more of a, I guess, recruiting coaching type question. But in college football, we have seen dominant quarterbacks like Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, Tua. And as we saw last night and throughout the season, Georgia did it with defense. And they did it with Stetson, who has the moxie, but is obviously not one of those high-caliber quarterbacks. So my question is, are we going to see that pendulum swing back to dominant defenses and coaches recruiting more towards building those championship defenses? So I just want to hear your thoughts about that. Thanks.
No, yeah, thank you. I think you've brought up a great point. Well, I mean, I hate to rely on the old defense wins championships. I wonder, my question is, will something like the transfer portal allow the SEC to cough up some of these incredible defensive players that have dominated in that conference and made them so strong at defense? I know you had some thoughts on this, JD.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is really interesting with this national championship is we've seen over the last couple of years the way that the game evolved. You needed elite line play and you needed an elite quarterback in order to win a national championship. Not necessarily the most high-flying offense, not necessarily the greatest defense ever seen, but you needed a strong offensive line and you needed a strong quarterback. That's what we saw last year when Alabama won the national championship. It's what we saw in 2019 when we had Joe Burrow lighting up scoreboards. It's what we saw when Trevor Lawrence was lighting up scoreboards for Clemson during their championship year. So on and so forth with all these new huge offenses that were starred by a star quarterback. But Stetson Bennett kind of raised that question of, you see that debate sometimes in the NFL of who is the worst quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And you still certainly need a certain level and high level of talent in order to win a championship. But it's a great question to ask of a Stetson Bennett. He's not exactly a guy that you expect, you know, he's going to go win an NFL MVP one day. He is tough as nails, but is he the most skilled quarterback to ever play? It kind of went back into that almost old style of Alabama football of like the AJ McCarrons, of like the quote unquote game manager type quarterbacks. And we saw an elite defense from Georgia this year. We saw some incredible line play under Matt Luke, which I think is one of the most underrated parts of Georgia's coaching staff. And then we also saw just a continued stream of five-star recruits, of incredible blue-chip players that let a guy like Stetson Bennett come in and game manage the game. I mean, we saw even stuff like Joel Klatt tweeting at the middle of the game saying, if JT Daniels is healthy, why isn't he in the game? Yet Stetson Bennett is still the winning quarterback. I think it's a fantastic question of how replicable is this, especially since we've seen the trend has been strong offensive line play and an incredibly strong quarterback. But I think, again, just with the way that COVID had messed everything up with a lot of off-season practices in the last year, how that changed a lot of recruiting in the last couple of years because you had less camps, you had less exposure, you had less evaluations. I'm going to be really curious to see how that eventually plays for that standard. We have the stud star quarterback and we need the stud star quarterback in order to win at a championship level. I know that the transfer portal is going to be a huge one. We've seen a huge amount of transfers, even from, like, you know, you look at Oklahoma, they had a preseason favorite and then a guy who looked like he was going to be the guy. And now Spencer Rattler is over at South Carolina and Caleb Williams is out in the portal and he's not confirmed to go back to Oklahoma either. I think this is going to be a huge example of what we're going to see over the next couple of years, as we're going to see a couple of recruiting misses just from the fact that COVID has changed a lot of different evaluations. And I think it's going to cause a little bit more chaos where maybe we see some of those principles again of the strong defense is what's going to bring you up to a championship level. So, but sports goofing though, like, I appreciate that question. And it's going to be one that I'm going to be pondering here for quite a while.
You know, one of the things that sort of got me thinking there, and I can't remember, and I apologize because this was a Wednesday press conference and I didn't have my note in front of me, but one of the real just stud defenders that were up there and it heading into the championship game, he didn't even play defense until like halfway through his high school career. And it was fascinating to see how his size had made such a huge difference. He's like, well, my coach in high school realized I was such an aggressive player physically. So he said, you know, you should switch to defense. And he said literally the moment he switched to defense, before he even played it down, he started getting offers because of his size and his stats. So I think that's another factor in it, is trying to get those defensive players who can be both strong, large, and able to compete at that level. And I do think to an extent, the SEC has had a really strong level of dominance on that. JD, but you wanted to add something. I apologize. Yeah.
No, you're good. You're good. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about, first and foremost, we're about 9:30. We're going to be doing probably about another 30 minutes here as people choose to be on here. We might end a little early, might run a little long. We'll see what happens on that. But we want to ask y'all, what is your favorite part of this season? When you look back at 2021 and this college football season, what are the memories that you're going to remember the most? Certainly encourage all of y'all to go down and put on that request in the bottom left-hand corner if you are on the app. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your questions. And Bobak, as we go ahead and wait for some of those callers to come in, what has been your favorite part of 2021 for this college football season?
Well, I mean, absolutely seeing all the crowds, mostly full force. I mean, a couple of exceptions. Hawaii, obviously, was a little slower to bring them back. I was excited to just see big crowds. I remember actually at this national championship game, I always, you know, you see a lot of people you see before, and I'm on decent terms with some of the members who run the college football playoff. And, you know, I chatted with them and they were just so happy to see a big crowd because for them last year was so strange in Miami. And I know Andrew, who's one of our co-hosts, was there for that game. But it was. How about yourself, JD?
I think for me, when it comes down to the question of what am I going to remember the most of 2021 and what's my favorite part of 2021, it's going to be two completely different answers. I think the thing that I'm going to remember the most from this year is the true change that we saw in recruiting in terms of power to players. This is a year where we saw Quinn Ewers, you know, he left high school a year early, cashed in an NIL check of about $1.4 million to go to Ohio State and said, nah, I'm going back home to Texas, and just absolutely finessed the system in order to get that done. I think that's a huge amount of power going back to the players, which is necessary in the sport and gives a little bit of power back to players And I think the other thing that we also saw in that very similar vein, which I'm also going to remember really strongly, is Travis Hunter, the number one overall recruit for 2022, spurning FSU to go to an HBCU over at Jackson State with Deion Sanders. I think in terms of how the landscaping or how the landscape has really shifted for these recruits is what I'm going to really remember from 2021. But I'm also going to be honest here. If we're going to talk about my favorite part of 2021, take a coin flip. Kansas beat Texas in Austin, and Illinois beat Penn State in 9 overtimes. That's going to be one of my favorite parts of 2021 forever.
Love it. Hey, Andrew, you wanted to add something real quick.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, my biased part is UCF getting the invite to the Big 12, and then also beating Florida, finally. We're the state champs for the year. But from a college football wide perspective, I'd say it was the kind of the coming of the G5s. There were so many upsets this year, so much chaos. I know there were some people, myself included, who were kind of comparing this a little bit to 2007 to a lesser extent. but it was cool seeing, you know, I forget who was on the AP end of the year top 25, but I think it was Cincinnati, obviously, but there was like Coastal Carolina, Utah State, BYU. You had all these teams. So I know there's still the Power Five, Group of Five distinctions, but it seems now that the Group of Five is starting to get a little bit more respect. And I think that was made apparent when Cincinnati finally broke that glass ceiling and got into the college football playoff.
I think that's quite possible, and I'm sure Kirk Herbstreit would have agreed with you. Now he'd say it was always respected. Hey, Ben, I'm sorry you've been up here for a bit. How you been doing, Ben? What do you got to tell
doing
us about?
Doing pretty well myself, though, this season. First of all, hello. This season, as an LSU fan, was it happened. Boy, did it happen. And, you know, there were some ups and some downs. But, you know, the ups, oh, boy, they were the highest of ups. So, for example, I got to go to the Florida game, which was a noon kickoff. Well, no, it was an 11 o'clock kickoff. And we just decided, what if we run the ball down the throats of the Florida defense? And we did it, and we beat them. And that was really fun, just being out there. It was a great atmosphere. That was the first time I was like, oh, yeah, this is what college football, this is what it's supposed to feel like. It was the first time it really felt like that energy had been gotten back because, number one, we were winning, but number two, Florida always brings the student section to life at LSU. That's the team we seem to hate the most. And then next to that was probably beating Texas A&M with about 20 seconds left. Just that beautiful pass by Max Johnson. Seriously, bro, you went to the school you beat on your last collegiate, on your most recent collegiate pass. Okay. And just like that rush, I've never been to a game where it's like, it ends on the final play, like a big touchdown pass, pro or college. That's never really happened. And so to be there for that was like, oh, that was awesome. And yet, those two are not the moments I'm going to remember the most. I'll remember those a lot. But the one I'm going to remember the most was the ending to UAB-UTSA, because I'd been going through a lot of stuff. I'd been really sick, and I needed something to, you know, get, it was like, help me out from that. And so I turn on this game because I hear it's really close, and it ends up being the greatest game that I watched the entire year. And it was like, yeah, this is why I love football. And I think that's what this year really was. It was reminding me of why I love college football.
Thank you. That was actually, that was awesome. and that was a great game. And, yeah, and hey, you know, LSU got a new head coach in the end. So definitely the adventure is about to begin there. So let's see here. We also have Suggs writer, Donald Suggs. And I apologize if I got the first name wrong. My name's Bob Akhayeri, everyone. So I am used to my name being mangled in many ways. So I apologize. And trust me, from my heart, I get it if I do mangle yours and I feel embarrassed. But what's up, man?
No worries. It's Darnell. Trust me, I'm from New York, and I moved here 15 years ago to Atlanta, and I've been called Darnell for 15 straight years. So it's all good. You're way better and way closer than most people I meet down here. So it's all good.
No, thanks, man. So what's up?
I mean, my best memory of the season. I obviously cover sports for a living, so I'm at a lot of games. So I'm going to kind of put it in the perspective of just being there. The 78,000 people we had at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the SEC Championship game. I mean, there was a buzz from outside the arena all the way until the final, you know, tick off the clock. And that was a really, really good buzz. And it wasn't like anything I had felt before. After doing this for a long time, you feel like games are games. But that SEC Championship game buzz, especially that first quarter, all the way through the first quarter, was a real legit feeling. I wasn't in Indianapolis last night. But I'm assuming it was kind of similar. Like that buzz I felt that night, all throughout the day, all throughout the evening, was really special. So I'm going to remember that for the season. And obviously Georgia losing that night and then winning last night feels like they're kind of connected. But that was a really good night for college football.
You know, that's a really interesting perspective, because now you've got me curious. If there's someone who's been to both games, what they thought. I felt Georgia fans were really into it from the very beginning, even on Friday. And it's interesting, too. I met a gentleman, and I kept running into him at the hotel bar. And he was an Alabama guy, much older gentleman. He'd been to a bunch of games. Actually, he wasn't even an alumnus. His wife was. He went to Penn State back in the day. But he'd been to, you know, every game ever since before Nick Saban. And he said, you know, as someone who's been to a number of these championship games, he's like, just watch. You know, it's getting a little quiet now. Then by Sunday night, things will get really hyper. And then, you know, Monday, it's going to be crazy. And I don't know if Monday was entirely as nuts as I expected it to be. And I wonder if the cold of Indianapolis was kind of messing with folks from down south. Now, I live in Minnesota. You're from New York. You know what I'm talking about. They don't exactly always know what they're in for. And Indianapolis wasn't too bad. I mean, I'm going to say Friday morning, I woke up and it was -20 without the wind chill here in Minneapolis. Then I hopped on a plane to Indianapolis, and it was 10 degrees. So it was a balmy day. But I wonder if that had something to do with it. But certainly that second half, and I think maybe the first half being kind of the five field goals was kind of a slightly subdued affair. But by that fourth quarter, particularly when Georgia went up by one and then realized they were really still in this game, and anything could happen, that stadium got really hyped. And I think for both sides. But I do wonder, I wouldn't be shocked, though, if the overall atmosphere at that SEC championship game was just a little bit more energetic. I mean, striking the end of the game, because I think the last quarter of the national championship game is going to blow the roof off of anything,
right,
especially
of course,
when it's a close game. But I think I wouldn't be shocked if it was more hype in Atlanta. Plus, it's a bigger stadium. There were at least, I think, 10,000 more people in that stadium. I mean, the Lucas Oil Stadium only seats about 63, and I think it was definitely over capacity for that game. It's more than 63. I'm conflating some numbers, but I wonder about that. That's a really good observation.
And having the game in Atlanta, it's SEC country, so it's really like personal. Folks will drive down. Like, it's no one's flying into this game. Most of these folks are either living in Georgia or living throughout the Southeast. So it's really personal, and it starts from the parking lots and tailgates and everything. So it does have a different energy than a regular bowl game or even a championship game in some cases. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, one of the things I kept seeing were the folks working all over the convention center and Lucas Oil, and even, you know, by the other tourist facilities, they still all had their Big Ten, you know, their Big Ten swag, because obviously the Big Ten championship game is there. And I have strong doubts it's ever going to be as exciting as the SEC. But thanks so much for joining us. It was great listening to you.
Thank you, brother.
Absolutely. Hey, JD, you have
before we go
to
on
real quick? Oh, yeah.
Yes. Before we get on to our next caller, which, by the way, if you want to hit that button on the bottom left for requests, we want to hear about your year in review and what you are going to remember from 2021 the most. I have to drop in this reply from Stephen Haltom. At Stephen Haltom, one of the greatest moments in the Big Ten this year. Rutgers earlier this year defeated Indiana 38-3, but the great gathering of topless men just gathering in that top section of Section 18, and that being the highlight of the game in Bloomington, that is something that needs to be framed, put in the Louvre, and remembered forever from this season.
Yes, it kept growing. Oh, my gosh. And all the creative names people were coming for, like the Gathering of the Bros. I can't remember. But, yeah, it's a reply to our most recent tweet. We were just saying we're taking your questions. Want to hear from you on the Reddit talk. But, yeah, at Stephen Haltom has put one of the screenshots when that gathering of shirtless guys. And it was not a warm day. It was not a warm day in Indiana at all. And it was at Indiana. So these were all the Indiana fans.
It's cold, it's gray. And the other wild thing is, like, they didn't even do it, like, you know, they didn't congregate in the lower bowl. They went, what is the furthest away we can get from the field? Can we remove our clothes and just start chanting in unison? Just absolutely incredible. Anyway, suffice that to say, you know, Samuel Rosenblum from at Rosenblum Samuel, happy to have you on. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, tell us, what does your 2021 in review, what are you remembering the most this year?
Right. Well, I'm picking two games here. I'm going to go with one game that's not my fan base, one game that is. I'm going to go with the one that's not for my particular rooting interest first. So throwing it all the way back here to week one, I feel like most people might not really remember this game in retrospective in comparison to the rest of the amazing games we got this season. But I'll never forget watching Notre Dame, Florida State. Obviously, that game didn't go Florida State's way, and really the rest of the season didn't go Florida State's way at all. But I don't know, just watching that fourth quarter overtime comeback from McKenzie Milton and I might be mixing up the names there. I'm a Big Ten fan. I'll get to that in a second. So my quarterback names are always down south, are not always up to snuff. But anyways, just watching that comeback it was Dylan Gabriel. Watching that comeback was amazing. But so now I'll go back to my stomping grounds, I guess, up in Big Ten country. I'm a Michigan fan, so obviously biggest moment for the year for me is going to be it wasn't even Dylan Gabriel. Anyways, so my biggest moment for the year is obviously Michigan beating Ohio State. I wish with every fiber of me that I was at that game. I was watching. I'm from New York City as well, so I was watching at home in New York City. So just like watching that field rush happen. I mean, I feel like it's hard to like think about in hindsight that I could have cried watching a college football game at some point in my life, but I honestly cried when that game ended. It was just like that rush of emotion of like, holy crap, this is like we finally beat them. And I went to University of Michigan during the 10-year drought, so it was just like so real. And I even saw some games as a student that were like close and just sort of the heartbreak of not winning, and then just the finally getting over that hump. And now, and obviously the playoff game was a fiasco, did not go very well at all. I think just as a sign of sort of the divide that there is still left for Michigan and Cincinnati's game. Frankly, went a little better, but that other teams have to overcome in order to reach the Georgia-Alabama level. But and then obviously with whatever happens with Jim Harbaugh, hopefully he stays. We'll see how that goes. But just that elation of just being like this, the monkey's finally off the back, was just unbelievable. So sorry again for messing up all the quarterback names for you Florida State fans and UCF fans. I promise I'll look it up afterwards, but that's my piece.
And you were right, it was McKenzie Milton, by the way.
Ah, god damn it.
Well, listen, it is all good. We appreciate the fact that you got to see that monkey finally come off the back for Michigan, and you got to watch a great game with Florida State and Notre Dame. I know that you mentioned, you know, it was week one, kind of washed away in the other great games, but it was that quick flash and moment where, you know, Notre Dame has this propensity to have this fantastic week one style game. I'll never forget the Texas's back game when Texas pulled off the upset at the time of Notre Dame. Little did we know that they would end up going 4-8 on the year. But Notre Dame has this way to give us really entertaining week one games. And, you know, I think this year with barely escaping out of Tallahassee with the win to hold off that Mackenzie Milton comeback, I think that was also one of the other great games of the year. And I'm really appreciative that you brought that up as well. And especially as a Michigan graduate or a Michigan student, I'm really glad that you finally got to see that fantastic moment of beating the school down south and being able to finally feel that joy and emotion of being able to beat up on that rival. I know there is nothing like that in this sport.
Absolutely. I was at, when I was a student back in the day, I got to watch USC snap an almost equally gargantuan streak against UCLA. And I stormed that field. And that's why I will never, ever, ever talk down to anybody storming a field. It is a glorious experience. Just make sure you're not in the first wave, because those are the people that usually get grabbed if security feels like they're going to try and stop a mob. And I was in the second wave and made it to the center of the Coliseum field in that first group, which is actually kind of confusing if you've ever stormed a field. If you're the first person to reach the middle, you kind of have this moment of like, oh, do I just start jumping now? because you're just looking at everyone, you know, they're not looking specifically at you. But anyways, all I have to say is the LAPD do play a little rough. So I don't recommend storming the Coliseum field and running right at them, because as it turns out, they know how to defend themselves quite well. And that's why we never got the goalposts down, because they defended those like they were the president. You know, let's keep on moving here. Their next speaker is USF football, please win. I think I'm kind of summarizing your Twitter handle correctly. Unmute yourself. We'd love to hear from you. And again, any of you would like to join us, we'd love to hear what your favorite moments have been this past season. And we're so thrilled to have all of you listening to us now. But if you can, and sometimes we run into technical difficulties. We initially did these on Reddit's copycat version of Twitter Spaces, and it was even more temperamental. But yeah, just go ahead and either request, or if you have been let up, we can, let's see, USF, please, football, please win. We are just, oh, there you go.
All right. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just want to say I love the account. I love the Twitter. There's so much you cover. And I just want to say I love the account. So I love all the stuff you post is great. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I got two things. So, one, I it's funny. I grew up a USF fan. And now I actually attend school at FSU due to some just, like, personal reasons and stuff like that. Just kind of, just that whole thing. So I got two things. One, I've been following USF my entire life, and it is rough. No conference championship to go for. You have an administration that does not care about athletics until now. So that's been very frustrating to watch. And I'm being honest with you, exciting part of this season has been the ongoing support for the indoor practice facilities being built for next season for USF, and the announcement that there's going to be an on-campus stadium, which helps the program so much, especially if they want to join UCF in that Big 12 and just catch up to them, because it has been hard to watch their success as a USF fan, because, you know, if our administration put in that much effort, we could be there. And it's just frustrating to see. But, you know, there's a lot of big hope. I mean, just leading transfers right now with FSU, so that's pretty cool to see. So I'm honestly, my favorite part is USF season, you know, and then again, you lose in the worst way possible to UCF at the end there, just a very disappointing ending. And it's like the best part was almost the off season, and like the hope for next year. They bring in talent. I believe in Jeff Scott, and that's kind of – it's kind of do or die, because if this doesn't work out, I mean, we might as well go to the FCS level. It is a rough spot right now. So it's kind of do or die next year. But on the other hand, I got to say FSU, being here as a student and going to Doak Campbell as a fan has been one of the coolest experiences. I got to say number one was actually the Notre Dame FSU game. I know it didn't go the way we wanted to, but that atmosphere and that energy – with everything, with Milton's comeback. I mean, even being a USF fan, I can tell you Milton's a great quarterback. And UCF has great quarterbacks. I mean, when Dylan Gabriel transferred to UCLA initially, a lot of UCF fans were, like, bashing him in the comments for leaving. But, I mean, that kid's a great quarterback. I was happy. I'm like, my gosh, I don't have to watch him just rip apart USF's defense for another year. You know, he's a great quarterback. UCF has a great way of getting quarterbacks. I'll give them that all day. So it was great to see his comeback, you know. And that whole game was insane. You know, you make that comeback and, you know, it's, and then – man, it's heartbreaking, but I remember that feeling of that field goal missing. And from our angle, it was hard to tell if it missed or not. But then you realize it missed, and the whole student section just – you could hear a pin drop. But, like, that was almost a bittersweet moment. And, you know, FSU, I don't know how they lost to Florida at the last game, seeing how they played in the Gasparilla Bowl. Again, there's some issues there. But, you know, I just think both programs, more FSU than USF. I love USF, but – man, I'm a very optimistic person, as you can tell with my username, but, oh, man, I'm just trying to speak into existence because I can't do anything else. But I'm excited for FSU, nonetheless, to be in attendance. We'll get a second shot at Brian Kelly. And, yeah, man, it's just been – it's been a great way. It's been a very frustrating year watching your two teams go 5-7, 1-2-10. It's been a rough year, but I've had a lot of great memories throughout. I know it's kind of long, but, yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you. And, you know, I feel like I got to just say I feel really old now that you followed USF football your whole life because I had graduated from high school by the time they started playing football there in 97. So, and it's funny too, because I mean, those of us of a certain vintage also remember USF climbing up in 2007 to the number two spot in the BCS poll. And it seemed like they were the rising team of the two younger sort of siblings in Central Florida and South Florida. And then here we are now watching UCF kind of paying off. But I think that on-campus stadium, it sounds like they're really serious about it. They're being super deliberate about the process. I mean, they're being really, I mean, slow, but not necessarily a bad way, but slower than I expected. Because I know they keep creating a timeline and they're sticking to that timeline. But I think sometime in the spring, we're going to finally hear where they think it should go. That's, I think, what I remember the step was.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think more June-ish, but like that spring, summer, I don't know. It's just, it's so refreshing to see like an administration that cares for this football team. It's just so, it's beyond frustrating to watch as a fan, to see your team get to that number two level, again, with not many resources at all compared to these other schools, to go there with all the odds stacked against them, and you have that much exposure to your school and you don't put tons of money into it. I mean, I can't think of a more golden opportunity to pump money into your football program. It is just beyond frustrating, but it seems like they, you know, again, better late than never. But we'll see.
Well, it's tricky. I mean, it's one thing you got to remember, as anyone who's worked with the university, and I adjunct professor myself on the side, it is a lumbering beast. So they're not very good at pivoting quick. And I think that took them probably by as much surprise 10 years after they started a program as it did the college football world. But again, it looks like they've got they're heading in the right direction. So I don't think, I mean, you joked about them moving down to FCS. I don't think that's ever going to be a problem for the Bulls.
I just joke about that, but it is, it's just, oh man, the 2020 season and then this season, it has been, it's just like, it's so much false hope, and then you just hope it comes together. And it's like, it's just like, can you win one game as a surprise? Can you beat Tulsa? Can you not get blown out by Tulane? Can you close out that UCF game? Like, just one of those wins, and I'd feel so much better. But the fact that you win none of those, it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, you can't even get one good win.
Well, you know, that'll make those all the more valuable when they do come.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and
but thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care. All right, Austin Hanna. Take care. Austin Hanna, we just added you on. We'd love to hear from you. I know some, looks like we may have lost him. So, it looks like he went back, it sort of chucked him back down. So we'll add the speaker. Hey, Austin, can you hear us now? Or can you speak now? You can probably hear us.
I just thought it was obviously an interesting national title game last night. St. Nick, the go-to college football head coaches, gets dethroned? I know he's getting older in age. How long is his reign going to continue? I mean, obviously it's Bama. They just reload consistently, but how long realistically? He's like the Tom Brady of college football.
I think it's when he says he wants to be done. What do you think, JD? I can't. There's no other way. It's either he's going to be rolled out of there or he's going to say he's done.
There's a reason he has coached in 9 out of the last 12 championship games. And I think even with Kirby Smart being able to bring up this power in the SEC East with Georgia, even with Dabo over at Clemson, even with Ryan Day at Ohio State, even with Lincoln Riley going out to USC, I don't think that there's any coach who has the elite capability of Nick Saban. And until he decides that he's done, I mean, this is a man who has said he wants to go on for more than 10 years beyond what we're at today. And this is a guy that I don't think it's not going to end until he decides I am done. And I almost guarantee he'll say he is done. And within 72 hours, he will have passed away. That's literally what's going to have to take for Nick Saban to not have to be an elite coach anymore. And I think this is a man who lives for being the guy that Nick Saban is. And I'm confident that as long as Nick Saban wants to stay at Alabama, they're going to be in that contention for the national championship.
You know, you make him sound like a shark, like he's got to keep swimming or he's going to say,
prove me wrong. You know. Prove me wrong.
He has a lot of Joe Paterno, Penn State. Like, you know, Joe Pa was there for so long, obviously, and the scandals kind of broke that made him leave. But I know he was, oh, good God, he was there for so long. So that's kind of what I was thinking. I don't think it's over. Like I said, Tom Brady comparison, we say Brady's done. Brady goes and wins a Super Bowl. He's still on track to go again. So that's just comparison I was drawing. I think you're absolutely right. He will not leave until he physically cannot go anymore. So thank you.
Hey, thank you, Austin. We really appreciate you and really appreciate your comments. And friend of Reddit CFB, host of the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast, Ty Hildenbrandt. I know that you're up here as a speaker. How are you doing tonight?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
It is well. It is very, very well.
Great. Thank you for honoring my humble request here to be with you guys tonight. I saw it pop up and I figured, hey, I have to go in and pay homage to our good friends at Reddit. You've all been so kind to us over the years with the Solid Verbal. So I appreciate seeing this pop up on my screen and the opportunity to speak here. Two things that jump out to me. You know, we were broadcasting like deep into the night, so I'm a little raspy here. But at least on our show, the Solid Verbal, like we try to take as big a picture view as we can to cover as much of the college football universe as we can. The two things that jump out to me, you know, one I think we saw coming at the start of the year, maybe not quite to the extent that it ended up truly being in the end. And the second, we never could have and could only have dreamed have that maybe the season would have gone the way that it did. But the first thing that I think we saw coming was the quarterback upheaval. You know, the storyline going into the season was so many of the top teams did not have a bona fide answer at starting quarterback. And what ended up going down was that, yes, that was very true. In reality, it was far like worse than we thought. You know, like Spencer Rattler ends up transferring before the end of the season, in a sense. Preseason Heisman contender just out. We had so much upheaval. You know, some folks know I'm a Notre Dame fan. That was weird, like really weird with Jack Cohn and is Tyler Buckner going to play or not? And just really across the country, we had so many issues of quarterback questions that we never could have foreseen that at the start of the season. And I think that added a layer of complexity to the whole thing that made it very interesting. So that for me, I think jumps out. And the second, you know, I mean, this is certainly no stranger to the Reddit community where everybody's always looking for the next big upset. But really, I can't imagine, and Dan and I have gone back and tried to talk through this and figure out, like, where does this year rank? I mean, somebody mentioned 2007, and, like, there have been so many great college football seasons where there has been truly the threat of a major upset week in and week out. And in looking back this season, I mean, perhaps it ended up where a lot of folks thought it would, with Georgia and or Alabama being the top dog. But ultimately, it really is about the journey for us as college football fans. And the fact that we had that constant looming threat of a big time upset week in and week out, whether it was Purdue or somebody else, that to me just made the whole thing special. It was an awesome year, wacky year in many senses, but it was an awesome year. And I'm glad that as college football fans, we got to go through it. It was a ton of fun.
It was such a rewarding time to see such an insane college football season, and to have one where it was, you know, the G5 representative in the playoffs is the only undefeated team at the end of the regular season. I mean, we had not seen that kind of, I don't want to necessarily say parity, because parity doesn't necessarily exist in college football. That's a feature, not a bug. But the fact that we saw Cincinnati was the only unscathed program making it to the end of the year really kind of emphasize that point that you made of you could see an upset at any single time. We saw Alabama for the first time in just about forever lose to an unranked opponent. Nick Saban losing to former assistants. We saw, you know, Michigan finally getting over the hump against Ohio State. We saw all these different wild upsets that happened all throughout the year, and that just makes this sport so much more special.
Oh, and you know, to build on that point, not to hijack the conversation too much, I'll step aside here in a second. You know, I think the one of the other assumptions that a lot of us made coming into the season was that with so many returning starters, and truly every team had like 16 returning starters at the beginning of the 2021 season, with so much returning production, my assumption was that we were going to see the top dogs truly be the top dogs. The rich were only going to get richer. And in reality, what I think we saw is that everybody was a little bit more mortal. And maybe The Athletic can write like a 5,000 word expose on why that was. I am not smart enough to know, but I do know that somebody will figure out the reasons why. And I'd love to hear what people think the reasons are. The 2021 season had just a different layer of parity than we've grown accustomed to seeing. It all kind of played into that fact that everybody was more mortal. Everybody was more at risk of an upset. You know, the Cincinnati thing was incredible. It was incredible. It was such a crazy year that by the end of it, when Cincinnati, a group of five team, we've been clamoring for a group of five teams to be in this playoff or at least have a shot for as long as any of us have been college football fans, right? And by the time we got to the final week of the season, it was sort of like no big deal because the season itself had been so crazy, which is wild to me that we ended up at this place. But it was a great year. I think it all stems from the fact that it was just a great year with just a different layer of nuance than we had seen in many years past. So incredible.
Absolutely. And I was just thinking when we were talking about your earlier comment on upsets, about the only team I thought was never going to be upset was Georgia, the way it was going. And of course, technically the SEC title game was their upset right before the playoff selections. And we were like, okay, well, they're clearly mortal. Maybe Michigan has a chance. And of course, all that did was sort of anger them and they went through and won their final two games. But thanks so much. We really appreciate you joining us, Ty. And we've always enjoyed working with you. I know we've got to do another AMA sometime. We'll just have you back on this show.
Yeah, man, let's do it. Hit me up. You guys know how to get in touch with me. We'd love to do it.
Yes, sir. We'll be riding into those DMs, my friend.
All right. Take it easy, fellas.
You as well. You have a good night.
So, JD, I know you got to head out, but I'll stay on for a bit so that we can let in whoever wants to talk and give their favorite college football memories this season. But any closing words as you take off?
Once again, I mean, I think Ty hit it right on the head. What a wonderful, magnificent college football season that we all got to witness, especially after the craziness that was in 2020, where we got to see very limited crowds. We got to see people back in the stands for an incredible, incredible slate of games week in and week out. We saw top 10 teams going down every week. We saw a record number of AP poll ranked teams go down in an upset. We saw absolute chaos. And you know what? To cap it all off, a team that had not won a national championship in 41 years, crowned a first-time head coach to get the first-time national championship for himself. And for me, that, I think, was just a great topper on an incredible chaotic season. Cannot wait to see what 2022 is going to bring us next. It's only going to be 227 days of wilderness to go. And Bobak, you know, I'm hoping for you for the best to go through that wilderness. I'm sure that we'll be going through it together. But I have loved this college football season, and I cannot wait for the next one to come around.
Thanks, AD. Yeah, I just have to say, don't worry. We'll probably find some late-night Japanese college football spring exhibition game to post at 2 in the morning on some day in May. But for what we're mostly used to, we're definitely going to have some time there as well. Brandon, I know we let you up. We'd love to hear from you. Brandon Porsche Freak.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to get your input on Commissioner Oresko of the AAC conference.
Hey, yeah, so the audio was a little choppy there, but I think you just asked about the AAC commissioner and what our thoughts are there. You know what? Andrew, you're up here. I think you have some particular thoughts, probably stronger than I could, as someone who has been a strong advocate for UCF in its years in that conference. What do you have to say about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, I still hold a bit of a grudge against AAC Commissioner Mike Oresko, because he really did not come out to back UCF in 2017 and 2018 when we went on that 25-game winning streak. You know, it's nice to see him now, you know, lauding Cincinnati and deservedly so, for their long win streak, for incredible back-to-back seasons here. But you wonder, at least I wonder, UCF fans wonder, where was he when we were doing something similar to that a few years ago? He wasn't nearly as vocal as he is now. And who knows? Maybe he wanted to toe the party line to not annoy the Power Five commissioners. Who knows? But it is clear, even still, props to Oresko nonetheless, whether it's his Power Six campaign, whether it's what schools they picked up in this expansion round. But it's apparent to me that the AAC is not going to simply just disappear now that UCF, Houston, and BYU are joining the Big 12. I won't say that they're going to be a better conference with those teams leaving, but they're certainly going to be the conference to beat in the Group of Five.
Andrew, I have a question for you to follow up on that. I mean, do you think to an extent losing those teams, you know, is that Oresko being a product of his own success? You know, is that sort of a result of it? I mean, I always, you know, an example would be, you know, he made those teams, he helped build a conference where those teams could shine to the point where they became attractive targets for the Big 12. Or is the success of those teams really regardless of whether or not he was there? It's a bit of a chicken and egg thing there, but could there be anything said for how he's been at the American in terms of boosting those teams to the point where they became attractive targets?
Well, in an answer you'll appreciate, it depends. I think it's a bit of both. I think a lot of it has to do, I think, with UCF's success. On the one hand, I mean, UCF was the standard bearer from 2017 and 2018, and at least into the beginning of 2019. That's when they picked up a lot of, you know, the news, especially after Danny White called us national champions. We claimed the national championship. That kind of got ears perked up in all ventures. I mean, there's someone today, I forget who it was, made his, I think, fourth year consecutive of making a UCF national champions joke, saying, you know, because UCF beat this team, who beat this team, therefore the national champions. It's still on people's minds 4 years ago, and that was just absolutely brilliant. I think seeing that success kind of raised the level of the American in terms of how people viewed it as a group of five, practically a group of six, a power six team. I mean, in some ways it's better than like the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or even the ACC in some years. So that's on the one hand, it's sort of the success of the teams. But on the other hand, like I mentioned, that Power Six campaign that he started, he does deserve some credit, absolutely. You know, he kept the American together, or the Big East together, when it was basically on life support. He brought in Navy, he brought in all these schools just to keep the conference alive, and that in of itself deserves a lot of credit. And not just bringing any teams in, but bringing in teams that were in fertile recruiting grounds, that had big fan bases, had big enrollments. So he positioned the conference in the best possible way to be successful. That combined with just a stroke of a perfect storm for UCF. And I neglect to mention Houston had a great 2015. I think it was the Peach Bowl that they beat FSU. So I focus so much on UCF, but Houston also has had a great run during the American, and then of course Cincinnati. So yeah, I think that's a long-winded way of saying I think it's both a product of what Oresco was able to do to raise the stature of the conference, then also the individual success of the teams in it.
That makes sense. You know, one interesting observation just from the national championship game last night, it was kind of a funny moment. I was coming up from the field, heading up to the press box on those extremely slow elevators. Every stadium has like the slowest elevators you've ever seen, but especially if it's heading to the press box. But I saw three commissioners I recognized all kind of hanging out. It was Keith Gill, who's a Sun Belt commissioner, Julie McLeod, who's a Conference USA commissioner, and Craig Thompson from the Mountain West. And we all ended up getting on the same elevator, and I couldn't help but say, like, so is this what you guys, like, do in your spare time? Do you go around solving crimes like the G5 Scooby, the G3 Scooby-Doo squad or something? They looked at me like I was crazy, but it's okay. I accept that. I thought it was amusing. But anyway, it's a little stiff. But it does tell you, though, how much these folks do hang out and do talk to each other. Or maybe they were conspiring to merge. I'll just pretend that that's what they were doing, but of course they weren't. But thanks again, Brandon. That was we appreciate that. We appreciate you joining the conversation. We want to go ahead and bring in AAC Guru, the real AAC Guru. What's up? Feel free to unmute yourself. I know. Oh, there it is. It worked. Sometimes.
Yes. Thank you for letting me chime in. And I appreciate all the great conversation. Appreciate letting me chime in. I'm just, I want to reiterate what Brandon said. I'm just a huge fan of everything that Commissioner Oresco has done to build up the league. And my favorite memory of this year's college football season was, you know, I love what Cincinnati did. And from an individual memory standpoint, it was probably seeing Nick Lachey in Mike Oresco's box for that game. I don't know if you saw that, but it was great. He's a big Cincinnati fan, and to see them together was really magical.
Absolutely. And thanks again. I mean, we really appreciate you you joining us. We're going to – let's see. I think we're going to do one more call because I'm running out of gas. the National Championship, as I said, most people don't realize this. It goes – keeps going. I mean, the last presser ended at around 1:45 a.m., and then you get to walk back to your hotel and then get ready for the presser that's early in the morning, which, again, is why you'll see tweets from various reporters – so happy they finally get to sleep again. But let's see, Hawks by a million. Hawks by a million. Can you unmute yourself? We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right. Watching the end of this Auburn-Alabama basketball game, but looks like Auburn's going to carry away. Just wanted to share my favorite moment from the college football season, this past season. I think you could probably guess based off my name.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd be shocked if I can't guess, but go ahead, please. It's better from you.
Yeah, no. So that Texas game was nuts because, I mean, it seemed like we were going to blow it in classic fashion and somehow just held on for the win. And the thing that felt special about this one is it didn't really feel as fluky. Yeah, we did give up a lead late, but, I mean, we had some – like it was a good offensive performance with Leipold, Daniels, and Neal. I mean, this team could be exciting in a couple of years. I'm really excited with the direction the program's heading.
Oh, absolutely. I've been big on Leipold on this, on all sorts of previous talks, because I knew how successful he was at D3. I was, you know, when it was like a duopoly between Mount Union and Wisconsin Whitewater, of course, Buffalo took the risk of the unusual FBS team hiring from a D3 program, and then Kansas took a move on him. But I think by all means I was excited to see him get that opportunity, just because I think he was underappreciated, because most people don't think of D3 football, especially not at the top level. And I can see why. They are sort of a different beast. You have a different kind of perhaps student athlete. I'm not saying less talented, but the approach is a little bit different, perhaps, but he's worked so far, and I think Kansas has got a lot to look forward to. Well, folks, it's we went a little bit past what we had planned. We planned to go for about an hour, and JD had to duck out on us. But thanks again, Andrew, for co-hosting with me. Thanks all of you for listening. My name's Bob Akhayeri. We're RCFB. We're the community on Reddit, the college football community on Reddit. We've been doing these talks. We're always flattered when those of you decide to spend some time listening to us. We will be probably doing another one next Tuesday and see where it goes. We enjoy doing it. We enjoy you joining us. We hope all of you have a great night. And thanks again. And Andrew, you wanted to pop in? I heard my feedback come in there.
Oh, no. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, then, what a cool way to end. Everyone, have a great night.
Good night.